Behind every line in today's Red Book is a family, a home, a lifetime of work and sacrifice. People are frightened, and they have every reason to be. The Chancellor has spent the last year terrifying them. Every decision that she and the Prime Minister make puts more pressure on the people who keep this country going. If Labour are the party of working people, why is it that every day under them, thousands more people are signing off work and onto benefits? It's Conservatives who are the party of work. The Labour Party should be renamed the Welfare Party. And they are making a mistake. The British public don't want higher welfare spending. They want people in work providing for themselves. They want to live in a country where hard work pays, where what you put in reflects what you get out. And we agree with them. There is an alternative. We Conservatives have set it out. This budget could have saved £47 billion, including £23 billion from welfare. She could have applied our golden economic rule, allocating half of those savings to cutting the deficit and using the rest to cut taxes. Oh, they're all pretending they're not listening. It's the shame of the mess they've made. It's the shame of the mess they've made.
Order! 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 Mr. Vince! Mr. Thompson, you're so enthusiastic, I was worried you were going to knock Mr. War off his chair a moment ago, so we need to calm down and breathe, and we need to ensure that we can hear the Leader of the Opposition. Kemi Badenoch.
Even the dog is laughing at the Chancellor, Madam Deputy Speaker. She could have applied our golden economic rule, allocating half of those savings to cutting the deficit, using the rest to cut taxes. She could have abolished stamp duty on homes to get the housing market moving, abolished business rates on shops to breathe life into our high streets. She could have introduced our cheap power plan. It saves a lot more money than what she announced, would bring down energy costs for homes and businesses. That's what she should have done. She should be on the side of people who get up and go to work, people who take a risk to start a company, people working all hours to keep their business afloat. She should be on the side of the farmer trying to hand something over to the next generation. The investor deciding whether to spend their money in the UK or elsewhere. She should be on the side of the young person looking for their first job. The saver doing the right thing and putting money away for a rainy day. The pensioner trying to enjoy a decent retirement. This country works when you make the country work for them. Only the Conservatives are on their side, Madam Deputy Speaker. And our plan for them is simple. Bring down energy costs, cut spending, cut tax, back business, and get Britain working again.
Colleagues are exiting. Can they do so quietly and quickly before we come to our first backbench contribution?
Kemi Badenoch, the Leader of the Opposition, has just completed her extremely hard-hitting and very personal response to the Chancellor.
She was quite spiky.
She was really enjoying herself
for once.
But she did have sight, of course, of what was in the budget itself.
She had help.
As we all had, and that makes that role much, much easier. You've been listening to Budget 2025 on Times Radio. Andrew Neil and me, Jo Coburn, will be with you, keeping us company until 4 o'clock this afternoon when John Pienaar will be live in Westminster, and tomorrow morning Kate McCann and Stig Abel will be speaking to the Chancellor herself. Let's go back to that budget speech of Rachel Reeves. She needed to land that speech with two audiences. The first, her own party, Labour backbenchers, particularly those on the left of the party. She wanted to absolutely put the blame of the figures that she announced today, the downgrades, the increased tax burden, on the Tories, on their legacy. She said that she was making Labour choices, her choices. No to austerity, no to cuts to public services. The downgrade on productivity by the Office for Budget Responsibility was as a result of Tory policies of the past. It was their legacy. Tories cutting spending on public services, and she also blamed Brexit and the deal that was negotiated. She wanted to set the scene and ensure that everybody in the House of Commons, their minds were what the Conservatives did before Labour came into power. The other audience that she was talking to were the markets. She was very, very keen to indicate to them that her fiscal rules that she talks about all the time, that they were still ironclad, that she has stuck to them, she'll continue to stick to them, so that the markets trust that she will make the books balance by the end of the forecast. We will go into the figures in just a moment. But the big headline for them was that we talk about headroom, the amount of manoeuvrability she has in terms of her finances. It's going to be double what it was, she says, at £22 billion, and she hopes that will keep the markets at bay. Now, some of the headline policies that were announced and the measures were, of course, around those tax thresholds. They are going to be frozen for three further years, and that is going to mean that the tax burden is going to reach an all-time high, £26 billion of tax rises. Andrew, that is on the back of her saying that she wasn't going to come back for more tax in the way that she did in her first budget with £40 billion worth of tax rises.
It is. It's not as much as the first budget, but £26 billion is still a lot. It is going to be paid by working people, despite Labour saying it wouldn't tax working people. If you freeze thresholds for another 3 years, working people are going to pay more tax. Indeed, we've completely changed the whole purpose of the tax brackets now. If you go back to 22, 23, when the Tories first introduced the freeze on tax thresholds, and go to the end of the decade, and she's extending the freeze beyond the end of the decade, there will be over 5 million more people paying tax in the 20% basic. People who, if the thresholds had been indexed, would not be in the tax system. Now they will be. For middle earners, just under 5 million of them will suddenly find themselves paying 40%. Now, I was doing the BBC's live coverage when Nigel Lawson introduced the 40% bracket. It was for well-off people. It wasn't for middle earners. It was for people who had big salaries. And now, just under 5 million people will be paying the 40%. And then 600,000 more will be paying the additional rate. Essentially, this is a standard
tax and spend.
Tax and spend Labour budget. Taxes up £23 billion to pay for a lot more spending, of which welfare is the single biggest amount. Welfare will go up by at least £9 billion. But there's a sting by the end of the decade. There's a sting in the tail. The OBR says it's not quite sure that some of the assumptions it's making are very robust. It's not quite sure that without welfare reform, welfare spending will not go up by more. So it says it could be out by £11 billion, by another £11 billion.
Well, that is a huge amount.
Which is a huge amount.
I mean, and when we look at these forecasts, they are casting so far ahead, because we don't know what's going to happen over the next few years. But it is clear that Rachel Reeves is trying to say that she hasn't broken her manifesto promise, or the government's manifesto promise, not to increase the headline rates of tax. And yet, as you have just outlined, millions more will be paying
more. And they'll be there'll be working people, and there'll be working people who'll be paying more tax to pay more benefits to a lot of people who are not working.
Yeah, and that is on the back, of course, as Kemi Badenoch, the leader of the opposition, was saying, is because they tried to have and introduce cuts to welfare, fairly modest cuts, £5 billion, and they weren't able to do it.
Because this is essentially a budget for the soft left of the Labour Party. This is a budget to save the skins of Rachel Reeves and of the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer. And I think it may do that in a way for a while. I think it may do that.
I think it has bought her time.
Whether it does it for the people, whether by satisfying the soft left for a while, you satisfy the people at the same time, that's the political conundrum. So let me bring in, we've got Dominic O'Connell here, the business correspondent of Times Radio, which we're going to bring in a minute. But Patrick Maguire is the chief political commentator of the Times. Let's go to him first. Patrick, what do you make of the politics of this? A budget for the soft left on one hand, but also a lot of the really big tax rises coming in about a year before the next election is due.
Well, exactly. I think in the immediate term, Andrew, as you and Joe have just very eloquently said, this shores up in the short term Rachel Reeves' political position as Chancellor, and with it Keir Starmer's position as Prime Minister. There is no question, I think, of them going this side of Christmas. But look at who is ultimately bearing the brunt of the raw politics of this budget, which, as you say, is very conventional tax and spend Labourism. It is higher spending on welfare Labourism. The loudest cheer was for the lifting of the two-child benefit cap. Now, lots of Labour MPs think of that as their moral mission, but the raw politics of that for a Labour Party that in opposition said, we have changed, we are fiscally responsible, we are on the side of working people. It made lots and lots of promises to businesses, large and small, and in office, not just in this budget, but in last year's budget, it has reverted to type. And nearly a million people will be paying higher rates of tax. Nearly half a million people will be dragged into the basic rate of income tax. Small businesses paying higher minimum wage, that national insurance hike from last year. People who try and judiciously financially plan being penalised for putting part of their salary in their pension pots. I mean, none of it adds up to the sort of politics Rachel Reeves promised in opposition. It's going to hit people in the wallet. And I think very quickly, actually, or relatively quickly, Labour MPs will find that the public don't like it. Yes. And it may well prove in time to be the Chancellor and the Prime Minister's undoing for that reason.
Well, I think you raise an interesting point there, because this could be one of these budgets. You know, budgets that we think are a success on the day or even the day after, usually by the weekend, have started to unravel. And I think one of the things that struck me, Patrick, and we'll play big into the politics of this, is that we know under the last Conservative government, the rise in living standards was anemic. Some years it barely happened at all. And if you're on a wage, your living standards are not going up. Looking at the OBR document, the living standards are going to rise by even less than they did under the Tories, by 0.5% a year rather than 1%. And by the way, people are going to stop saving. The OBR says the savings rate is going to collapse. It won't take long for everybody to find that out.
Yeah, look, I've just had a text I'm speaking to you from a senior Labour figure who said, it's a disaster. We're on the wrong side of every statistic and public opinion. And I think that ultimately sums it up. I mean, you mentioned living standards. Let's judge the Chancellor by her own measure. She told Labour MPs earlier this week that this budget was about three things. Cutting NHS waiting lists. Okay, they're doing that. Cutting the national debt. What do the OBR say? The national debt will be up by the end of this decade.
Yes.
And also cutting the cost of living. Now, inflation will be up by 2030 and real household income, real household disposable income will be down. And as you say, that negligible rise in living standards and people stopping saving, it is not a recipe for the median voter. You know, in Number 10, they used to speak of grafting realists and striving moderates as their two key constituencies, the sort of Mondeo men and women of the age. They are not going to be feeling any better off as a result of these decisions and a result of Rachel Reeves' time as Chancellor. And that's the ultimate test. They will feel that they're paying the price for this. And I think, you know, as much as it's shored up her position internally, it is not a recipe for a happy electorate.
But shoring up, Patrick, her reputation and her position internally does seem to be the main mission, or one of them, of today. So the announcements around cost of living measures, things that will help in the immediate term for a lot of people who are at the lower paid end of the salary spectrum, or who are out of tax altogether. How long do you think it's going to take, though, when you take all of these other measures, particularly in terms of tax rises, that actually that is not going to help people feel better when they're still paying higher prices, or certainly high prices, in the shops, even if they have a little bit more money in their pockets?
Well, the problem with the decisions the Chancellor has made is that she has made, you know, more than a dozen individual decisions on taxing and spending that are going to hit people in a very direct way. Salary sacrifice is one. Look at the new paper mile levy on electric cars. You know, I was speaking to the pollster Luke Trill about this last night, actually, and he made the point that there are lots of individually popular measures in this budget, but actually most people have at least one tax rise amidst the many of them Rachel Reeves introduced that they really, really dislike. And that is going to be the problem. If you don't have a salary sacrifice pension, you might have an electric car. And chances are, if you are a working person, to use Labour's language, you will be impacted by fiscal drag and frozen thresholds. So almost everyone will find something to be annoyed with in this budget, and that is the fundamental problem. Whenever it comes, that is the problem.
And that's the problem with the smorgasbord approach, isn't it? Because you're going for a lot of small tax changes, and there's always someone you're going to annoy, some powerful vested interest or lobby group, and you're going to annoy them. There'll be kickback, and you probably end up won't getting the revenues that the OBR is predicting. I would suggest, Patrick, though, that a potentially toxic, politically toxic element of this budget is the following. If you're a worker on average, below average, or just above average earnings, your tax threshold is frozen. Frozen again. It will be frozen for almost a decade when this cycle is over. Started with the Tories, continued by her. If you're on benefits, your benefits are not frozen. They're index linked to inflation. And I think that is potentially politically toxic.
I would completely agree. Look too, by the way, at the triple lock on the state pension. Now, in time, that's going to drag some pensioners into the basic rate of income tax, which is clearly going to have political pain for the Labour Party in this government as well. But it is for a large group of people who feel that they do the right thing. They go out to work, they graft, they do what the government says, they make decisions on their taxes and their investments and the cars they buy based on the policies they assume to which the government is committed. They've all been summarily changed. So what is this government saying to, in the truest sense of the word, working people, to the small businessmen and women that Reform and the Conservative Party are speaking directly to? They're saying a lot to people whose incomes are dependent entirely on the state. And indeed, you look at that, as you say, Andrew, and they're getting a better deal than working people. Rachel Reeves, I've spoken to her about this, said she wanted contribution to be the main theme of this budget. She used that word a lot. Indeed, she tried to justify the frozen thresholds on that basis. But the problem, the political problem, is people will feel that they are contributing and others who are not contributing or have not contributed on the same level that they have are reaping the benefits of their contribution. And that is the fundamental political problem.
I mean, Patrick, what did you make then of a rather large chunk of her speech being dedicated to scrapping, we knew it was going to happen, scrapping the two-child benefit cap? Talking to her party, they've wanted it, and she set out a very long justification for why it was the right thing to do, why it would help hundreds of thousands of children out of poverty. And yet, you know, they came into power in, you know, July 2024, and she said it wasn't affordable then and it wasn't a priority, and yet now it is.
Yeah, look, this time last year, there were seven Labour MPs who didn't have the Labour whip because they tried to amend the King's Speech to lift the two-child benefit cap. Now, apparently, it is the Chancellor's moral mission and the thing she came into politics to do. Now, I don't doubt the sincerity of that on some level. It is a totemic issue for the Labour Party, but it sits uneasily with everything Labour said about its electoral coalition and the promises it made to them in opposition. And look, it also sits very uneasily with her promises of fiscal restraint as well. But what has changed? Her political position has changed comprehensively. She is now doing all of this from a position of weakness. And the problem is she is uniquely weak in two areas. She is weak among her own party and she is weak in terms of her public standing. Now, the problem is, while she may get temporary thanks and respite from the Labour Party for that, the people who voted for those Labour MPs, the people who Morgan McSweeney and other strategists spent a long time trying to win back to the Labour Party with a message of, you know, tough stances on law and order and defence and fiscal rectitude, will doubtless, many of them, feel betrayed. And that's what I think wiser heads, the heads who wouldn't have been cheering on the back benches for that announcement, know and appreciate to be the case.
Patrick Maguire, Chief Political Commentator at The Times, thank you very much for talking to us. You're listening to Times Radio, Budget 2025 with Andrew Neil and me, Joe Coburn. Please keep us company till 4 o'clock this afternoon, and then John Pienaar will be taking over. In a moment, we are going to be talking to Dominic O'Connell, Times Radio's business correspondent, after this.
Early Breakfast with Rosie Wright on Times Radio. Start the morning bright and early with me, Rosie Wright, to discover the day. I'll have a first look at the news.
We've got far more patients needing help and far fewer GPs to deliver it.
The business headlines.
We've seen signs that we could actually avoid a recession.
Sports and, of course, politics too.
The government really are coming under criticism, particularly from the House of Lords, that they didn't put a much more binding agreement in place.
Early Breakfast with Rosie Wright.
Tomorrow morning from 5 on Times Radio. Radio. Expert recommendations for the best TV, film and music. The To-Do List, Sunday nights from 11:30 with Daryl Morris.
The Budget 2025 on Times Radio.
You're listening to Times Radio Budget 2025 with me, Jo Coburn, and Andrew Neil. We've been joined by Dominic O'Connell, Times Radio's business correspondent. Dominic, what was your immediate impression when Rachel Reeves sat down?
Well, I think we should actually take a minute to reflect that we have, for the first time, had an entire budget leaked an hour before the Chancellor got up. Mm. That's never happened. When Hugh Dalton, Attlee's Chancellor,
going back a bit,
spoke to a journalist from The Star, a non-defunct paper.
You were there.
He happened to mention in 1947 that there was going to be a penny tax on beer, and he resigned the next day. So, you know, the idea that an entire budget can come out an hour in advance before the Chancellor stands up is totally unprecedented. Also, I've already seen some messages from people saying, from people who are trade on this kind of stuff. Some people had it in the markets, others did not. Mm. So,
well,
you know,
Rachel Reeves was very firm at the beginning to place that directly on the Office for Budget Responsibility. I'd love to be a fly on the wall for those conversations and emails later on.
Well, I think, though, all this obscures what is the bigger picture of this budget is that we get more borrowing in the short term to pay for extra spending on things like winter fuel payments that weren't cut, welfare payments that weren't cut, local authorities in particular, big extra spending, and then less borrowing in the medium term as those tax rises, which are in this budget, kick in. Lots of tax rises, as you said earlier, Andrew, in an election year. What could possibly go wrong? The other surprise in the OBR, Joe was talking about the fiscal headroom for Rachel Reeves, $9.9 billion. She's taken it up to $22 billion. If she'd done nothing, she would have met it by £4 billion. So she wasn't going to bust the fiscal headroom at all, because the OBR downgrade was actually countered by higher pay growth than expected. The OBR has only fractionally increased the chances of Rachel Reeves meeting that fiscal headroom target from 54% to 59%. So they still think it's probable, but only just probable.
And they're worried about this welfare spending aren't they?
Well, they list a whole bunch of things. Any kind of shock, given that it's a government that spends more than £1 trillion a year, £22 billion is nothing. So really, there's lots of risks, particularly with being an election year. The other thing that this smorgasbord conceals is what's been a slow-moving shift, which is cemented by this budget, a big change in the nature of the British economy. So taxes as a share of GDP pre-pandemic were 32%. It'll be 38% by 2029. That's a fundamental shift. Two-thirds of that increase has come from rising personal taxes. Mm. And it's the same picture for government spending, 44% by 2028, and it was 6 percentage points below that pre-pandemic. So I think there's a big shift going on here, which has been slightly obscured by the multiplicity of measures
because
we have
today. Because of all the smaller tax rises.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, on the smaller tax rises, I mean, how viable is it that all the money that Rachel Reeves says she will raise from that smorgasbord of tax rises, that they will actually raise that amount of money?
Well, the OBR is very clear that all these things are quite sensitive to people's behaviour, unlike, say, an income tax rise, which you can be pretty sure of getting.
And you get right away.
And you get right away. You talked about the toxicity, Andrew, of the frozen thresholds. I think there are three things in this budget that will really come to bite and really annoy people. And in fact, I've been contacted by people about it already. The salary sacrifice thing, it doesn't kick until April 2029, but people don't like that idea of being penalised for saving. And salary sacrifice is a very straightforward scheme. It works well and it's easy to understand. The increased taxes on savings and property income, 2 percentage point increase on income from savings and property income, so for landlords, You at the moment, you just pay your ordinary income tax rate. In future, you'll be paying 2% more. So 22% if you're a basic rate taxpayer, 42% and 47%. I think people don't like that idea of being penalised for saving.
Because we're meant to be saving.
we're meant to be saving. And on property, the scheme for the additional surcharge, this is you can just see
it
this being a car crash.
It doesn't raise that much, does it?
It doesn't raise much money. And also it's complicated. So homes over £2 million value, as rated by the Valuation Office, £2,500, and it goes up to a maximum of £7,500 if you're in the highest band of £5 million or more. There's going to be bunching of property sales in and around those transition periods and loads of appeals. You can just see that being a real headache.
I mean, one of the sort of disputes, if you like, already from Kemi Badenoch, the leader of the opposition when she stood up, was over inflation and whether or not, according to the OBR, it's going to stay higher for longer.
For the next few years.
Yes, and that means...
And she tried to say that wasn't the case.
The OBR is quite clear that their forecast for inflation in what they've published today is higher than the forecast they published in March.
Mm. And that means more expensive for people when it comes to their weekly shop, particularly. And again, people may not feel the relief that Rachel Reeves was setting out by scrapping the eco scheme, the Tories eco scheme on energy bills. Mm. Yes, it will be popular in of itself, but whether or not people will feel better off, you know, it's always the ultimate question, is dubious.
I think that's exactly right. There's a few other little interesting things around that cost of living thing. So the average interest rate on mortgages, which the OBR has forecast, they expect it to rise, which is slightly odd given the interest rates are meant to be coming down. They say they expect the average interest rate on mortgages to rise from 3.7% last year, mm-hmm. so they're looking backwards there, mm-hmm. to 5% in 2029.
That's a big rise.
Which is slightly odd given that we expect interest rates to be falling over the next few years.
Right.
So also just on inflation, going back to inflation as well, they don't expect inflation to return to the Bank of England's target rate of 2% until 2027, which is a year later than their previous forecast.
Can I just for our listeners, because some of them will be interested in what we're calling the mansion tax, what was announced. It doesn't come in until April 2028. If you and the top three bands of council tax will be revalued to 2026 prices. If it turns out your home is too... Sorry, am I wrong there?
Well, it doesn't quite say that. It says that the Valuation Office will value homes and those above £2 million. So it seems to me this is independent of any banding. Mm. This is a new valuation.
But it's not going to value every house. Otherwise, it'll be here forever.
How else will they know?
It'll take the top three bands. I assume that anybody in the lower bands is nowhere near 2 million.
No. Those bands were set a long time ago.
Oh, I understand. They were set in the early 19... John Major, I think, was still Prime Minister. But anyway, if your house is valued at more than 2 million, you will pay an extra 2,500.
A year.
A year.
From 28.
From 28 onwards. Rising up to, if your house is valued at over 5 million, which is essentially a London and maybe bits of the southeast issue, you'll then be paying 7,500 a year more. Mm. And these figures will be linked to the CPI. CBI will probably be paying it as well, but definitely the CPI, which is our measure of inflation. But here's the rub, that you do all that, and a lot of people will like it. These are relatively wealthy people. A lot of people will say, yeah, I've got a big house, but I've got no cash, so I can't pay. And what do you get in return? It's the pasty tax in bricks and mortar form.
That's right.
You get less than half a billion.
Well, that's right. You don't, and also the money raised goes to central government, not to
to the local authority.
Well, that's very important change.
Yeah, it doesn't help clean up the local swimming pool.
Just going back to that point about the bans and the valuation tier, if you live somewhere like Walthamstow in East London, when John Major was in power, property prices there were completely bombed out.
Correct.
Now it's a very valuable bit of real estate. So you are going to have to revalue all those houses, I suspect.
Right. Can I ask you just something about the wage increases? Because you mentioned inadvertently the CBI. But one of the perhaps not inadvertent consequences, but putting up the national minimum wage and the living wage, how difficult do you think that is going to be, Dominic, for employers? Because it's great news for those who are lower paid and young people particularly, but not if they can't get a job.
Well, exactly that. It is another burden on business. Businesses, if you talk to business leaders about this, you get a mixed bag of responses. Mm. They are, in general, quite happy. They quite like the idea of paying young people more. What they do worry about is the compression effect. They want to pay the person who's been working for them for 10 years a decent interval compared to the new joiner. So it does have the effect of pushing up all wages across the board, really, eventually. The other thing they are really worried about, perhaps more so than the minimum wage, although there is an additional cost, is the employment rights bill, which is lowering over the horizon.
Which the OBR has not scored.
Has not scored, exactly.
Hasn't taken that into account.
There's lots of things, actually, the OBR has not scored, like non-DOMs and other things.
Right.
You raise a very important point, a conceptual issue that I want to talk about while we took a break there. Because I think what you were saying to me and Joe was that what Labour is now doing with the previous budget and now this budget is it's kind of consolidating the post-pandemic economy, which is very different from the pre-pandemic economy. And it's different above all in two ways, I think you were saying, is one, the tax burden is much higher, and two, public spending is much higher. And rather than trying to get us back to the pre-pandemic economy, it is building, it is baking in the post-pandemic economy as the future.
Yes, I think it's a confluence of two things, isn't it? We had the big shock of the bank, or three things actually, the banking crisis, which pushed up government borrowing. Then we had the pandemic, which pushed it up much higher. Mm. But that is coincided with a splintering of British politics where no one really has the authority to say, right, I'm going to cut government spending. It's impossible to do for the Conservatives, really, and as Rachel Rees has found out, impossible for Labour. So those three forces working together have entrenched that idea of quite a high tax, high spend economy, in British terms at least.
Right, well, I mean, I think that is very interesting when you talk about the splintering of politics, because, of course, we've got many more parties that the government is having to deal with on both sides, right and left. But it also points to this idea that, you know, having a big majority doesn't seem to count in terms of being able to push through your legislative agenda.
Well, Boris Johnson taught us that.
Absolutely.
You don't even survive with a big majority anymore.
I mean, and that means that getting through the sorts of policies, when we talk about the post-pandemic economy, the trade-offs that everyone asks governments to be honest about, it comes back to that core promise in the election, we won't raise those headline rates of tax, but there won't be spending cuts and we won't have to borrow anymore either. And in the end, this new type of economy is about taxing more. It is about spending more. There is still a hangover from the pandemic.
Yes, I think Rachel Reeves's hope, and which she expressed before the election and before the budget last year, was that growth would come to save everybody, and it just hasn't come.
And in fact, it's been downgraded by the OBR.
And it's been downgraded again by the OBR today. So so growth isn't coming. Maybe the AI genie is going to come and save the Labour Party. I don't know.
Well, I doubt that. I just don't think it's going to save anybody. The next Times Radio budget will be presented by AI. It is interesting that on the politics and the economics, Joko, that we're now a multi-party system. Mm. Just like Europe. We now have a tax burden level heading to European levels. We now have a spending level heading to European levels. So the consequence of voting for Brexit in 2016 was politically and economically to make us a lot more like Europe.
Right.
As the Americans would say, go figure.
Right. Well, on that note, go figure. Thank you very much, Dominic O'Connell, for joining us on Times Radio for this budget 2025 with me, Joe Coburn, and Andrew Neil. We'll be back in a moment or so, and we'll be speaking to a Starmer loyalist to get her view on the budget.
Kate Borsay on Times Radio.
It is one of the most anticipated budgets in recent British history. When the dust settles, we'll get across everything you need to know from the day with our expert panel, including the government's former advisor on tax and a former chief of staff to George Osborne. And we'll welcome you into our Millionaires Club with reaction from Lord Billimoria, former president of the CBI, and three managing directors of family-run firms with a turnover of more than £100 million.
Kate Borsay, tonight from 7 on Times Radio.
Visit Times Radio on YouTube for the latest videos and interviews.
The Budget 2025 on Times Radio.
This is Times Radio. You're listening to Budget 2025 with Andrew Neil and me, Joe Coburn. We have been discussing and analysing the budget from Rachel Reeves and the response from Kemi Badenoch. A lot of it we knew already, but just to remind listeners who are joining us now, it came to those freezing of the tax thresholds. Rachel Reeves confirmed that they are going to be frozen for an extra 3 years, in stark contrast to her promise last year to actually unfreeze them in 2028. And the tax burden is projected to hit an all-time high. From 2028, high-value properties will face a surcharge. Houses over £2 million, worth over £2 million, will face a surcharge every year of £2,500. Those over £5 million will pay a surcharge of £7,500. But that will affect, Rachel Reeves says, fewer than 1% of properties. And there were some cost of living announcements by Rachel Reeves, including bringing down heating and energy bills by scrapping a scheme, an eco scheme by the Conservatives, and scrapping the two-child benefit cap that families can claim now for a third or fourth child on universal credit. Andrew.
Right, well, lots still to talk about as the afternoon goes on, and it's one of these budgets, the more you dig into it, the more you find
out. Well, there's a lot in it, of course.
There's a lot in it, and with all these tax rises, then we need to look carefully. But let's get a Labour perspective on this. Let's speak to Jess Asato. She's the Labour MP for Lowestoft. Jess Asato, welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon.
In the Labour manifesto, Labour pledged not to increase taxes on working people. In the budget last year, it pledged not to increase taxes on working people. In the spending review this year, it pledged not to increase taxes on working people. And now you've increased taxes on working people. Why?
Well, this is a Labour progressive budget, which actually helps those on the lowest incomes the most. We heard that the national living wage and the national minimum wage will go up
in
April.
But my question was, why have you increased taxes on working people?
Well, I don't think that we have. This budget actually cuts the cost of living. It also puts the investment in our public services, particularly in getting NHS waiting lists down. But we're also cutting the national debt and borrowing, because there is no economic sense in us spending more and more on the national debt when we could be spending it on public services.
But Rachel Reeves said in her budget speech that she was increasing taxes on working people.
We're increasing taxes on, you know, millionaire properties.
You're increasing taxes on you're increasing taxes on low income earners who will now move into the 20% bracket. And you're increasing taxes on middle-income earners who are not earning a packet, they're not millionaires, who move into the 40% bracket. These are working people. Even by Labour's definition, you're increasing their taxes.
As I said, the fact is that the changes that we're making to the incomes of the lowest paid actually means that their incomes will be going up, because we know that the cost of living remains the highest concern for people. We also know that people have had enough of our public services collapsing. As an MP, what I see is the devastation of 14 years of Tory austerity. We're not going back to that, because it not only undermined our society, but our economy too. And we've also beat the forecast for growth. And we've seen that
only this year. Only this year. Every year after that, to the end of the decade, the OBR has reduced the forecast for growth. And you were elected on a growth mission. But you talk about how cost of living is what matters, and that that's going to be all right because that's going to be better. But the fact is, when you look at the figures, living standards in the next 5 years are going to increase at a lower rate than they did under the Tories. And that was useless enough.
We know is that wages are actually up more in the
first year. We're talking
about
living standards. Wages are only one element of that.
Under Conservatives.
Why are living standards scheduled now to rise by less than they did under the Tories?
One of the things that we also announced today is that we are going to be cutting the cost of living with £150 off average energy bills.
But the OBR has taken that into account. It's taken that into account. And yet still, under the Tories, living standards barely increased by 1% a year. They are now under the OBR, they're scheduled to increase in the next 5 years by 0.5% a year, 50% of what the Tories' anemic growth rate was. Why?
Well, what I'm saying is that I think people will recognise what they actually feel in their pocket. And if that is increased wages for them, money off their energy bills and public services that they can actually access so that they can get better, they can get into jobs because actually they're not languishing on waiting lists. Those are the sort of things that make a real difference rather than what the OBR says. And the fact is that we've already seen that we can change those forecasts when we focus on our growth mission. And so from my perspective, actually things like ending the two-child limit, which was something that I spent 3 years before I came into Parliament campaigning for, this is the sort of thing that actually people expect a Labour government to deliver.
But you're going to lift 450,000
children out of poverty. At the end of the day, that's the reality.
You move for
those families, those children. Those children will not go to school hungry.
We don't know that because you move 400,000 people across a poverty line. In statistically, we don't know if in the end you actually take them out of poverty. But let me ask you this on the two-child benefit cap. We were told by the government last year you couldn't afford it. 7 Labour MPs lost the whip for voting for it. What's changed now, given that inflation's higher, growth is lower, living standards are poorer? Why can we afford it now and we couldn't afford it a year ago?
We hadn't had our child poverty strategy, and what we've seen is that we are increasing taxes on gambling. We're reducing spend on schemes like Motability, and that means that we now have the funding that we can afford it. But that, you know, it is a Labour mission that we lift children out of poverty. That benefits not just them, but the whole of our society and our economy too. In my constituency, that will be over 2,500 children who have their lives, you know, not living in poverty, being able to...
Oh, a lot of them will still be pretty poor. They're not just lifted out of poverty
by this. I've met many families, okay, who are affected by the two-child limit. This is a real difference that will make a real difference to those children. And remember that this policy failed on its own terms when it was introduced by the previous government. 6 in 10 families that are hit by the two-child limit are actually in work. So it was developed to try and prevent people from having two large families, but that's not what happens in life. You know, there are hard knocks when children shouldn't have to bear the brunt of that. And I'm just delighted that the Labour government has announced that.
No, I know that's the bit you like, and that's the bit of low-hanging fruit she threw to you. I understand that, because this was a budget designed to appeal to the Labour backbenches rather than the country as a whole. You will know that the two-child cap is rather popular in the country. But let me ask you this, because this is touted as a Labour budget with Labour values. So is it a Labour value that if you work, if you're a worker on average earnings, the tax you pay is no threshold, is no longer index linked and won't have been for a decade. But if you live on welfare benefits, your benefits are index linked. I mean, why is that a Labour value?
Labour values are about increasing the incomes of those in work who are on the lowest incomes. That is a Labour value, and that's what we're doing by increasing the national living wage and the national minimum wage.
Why do you put a greater premium on index linking those who are on welfare benefits as opposed to hard-working, average-income families who you've frozen their index linking? Why?
Because many people on benefits are also in work, and it's very, very important that those people have enough money to sustain themselves, because actually that also benefits our economy. When people live in poverty, that puts huge pressure on our public services. And what we found was that the years of austerity not only didn't actually stop our debt going up, increased the debt going up under the Conservatives, but also it put huge pressure on our public services, which are in crisis. Wherever you look, whether that's children's social care, whether that's the NHS, those services are struggling because actually we have many, many people who are in poverty, who don't have the income levels that they should. And when you actually increase those income levels, you start to see the pressure on public services dropping, but also people are able to live the lives that they should be able to lead.
All right, Jess Asato, thank you for joining us on Times Radio on Budget Day. That's Jess Asato, the Labour MP for Lowestoft.
Right, and Joe, in the last few minutes, we've just been told that the OBR, the Office for Budget Responsibility, has now apologised for what they're calling a technical error. Well, Rachel Reeves made it very clear it was squarely
their fault. I'd like to congratulate them.
Well, you're going to hear from them in just a moment because we're going to talk to David Phillips, Associate Director at the Institute for Fiscal Studies. But let's hear, first of all, from the OBR and that apology.
Before I turn to the substance of our forecast, let me start with an apology. A link to our economic and fiscal outlook document went live on our website too early this morning and was subsequently removed. We apologise to the Chancellor, members of Parliament for this technical error and have initiated an investigation into how this happened. It'll be reporting to our Oversight Board, the Treasury and the Commons Treasury Committee on how this happened and how to make sure it doesn't happen again.
That was the chair of the OBR, Richard Hughes. Obviously, extremely embarrassing. I mean, unprecedented. Nothing like that has ever happened before. Let's just pick up on that point with David Phillips, Associate Director at the Institute for Fiscal Studies. Welcome to Times Radio and Budget 2025. Well, what do you make of what happened and the apology?
Well, I first say, actually, from our point of view, it was somewhat helpful. Rather than having to wait for the Chancellor to kind of say things, we could actually start our number crunching and working through things a bit in advance. But of course, you know, we're a bit unusual. There are problems caused by this. You know, not everyone would have seen this at the same time. Someone would have seen this online. It could actually give sort of market-sensitive information.
Yes.
And obviously it stole some of the thunder for Rachel Reeves as well. So clearly this is the kind of thing you don't want to happen. But from a really selfish perspective... You know, it helped me. You know, I'm more prepared now than I would have been otherwise.
Yeah, and it helped me and it helped Joko as
Yes, well, I think it helped everyone. No one thinks of the OBR and the journalists, do they, covering these big set-piece events. But now that has happened and you had a little bit more time to pour over the figures, what was your main impression and takeaway?
Well, I think there's a couple of things I'd take away from it. Firstly, was that whilst the Chancellor talked about higher growth in this year, actually the growth forecasts have been downgraded.
Yes.
So we expected that to happen. We also expected that to open up quite a big hole in the public finances. Now, there is a bit of a hole compared to where we expected back in March, but it wasn't as big as we expected it to be. So we thought maybe the forecast would be downgraded by maybe £20 billion or so, forcing the Chancellor to kind of come back for more money to just actually meet her fiscal rules. Now, the forecasts were downgraded, but more like about £6 billion. So actually, even if she had sort of like just stood up and sat down, she would have still met the letter of her fiscal rules.
Yes. Were you surprised? Were you surprised by the fact that it wasn't as big a hole in terms of the public finances?
Well, I must say I was a little bit surprised. There's basically two things going on here. They downgraded the productivity forecast by about 0.3% a year. So the economy's productive potential got by less than we previously thought. That means slower growth. That means slower revenues. That knocks about £16 billion a year out of the revenue forecasts. Mm. But at the same time, the Chancellor thinks that the growth that will happen, or say the OBR, I should say, thinks the growth that will happen is going to be more tax rich. There'll be higher earnings growth, higher consumption. There'll be more capital gains and dividends because of a stronger stock market. And the underlying tax revenue forecasts, despite that weaker economic performance, were actually upgraded somewhat. So that's meant that the hole in the finances wasn't as big as we perhaps were expecting. But the Chancellor has still decided she wants to actually not just kind of maintain that headroom she's had, she wants to increase it to avoid the sort of risk of speculation having to come back budget after budget with more measures.
Right. Well, let's talk about the tax rises that have been announced, because you said in the run-up to this budget that the Chancellor needed to avoid directionless tinkering and half-baked fixes. What do you think now, having heard it?
Well, I think you can see some areas where the Chancellor is trying to fix what she would see as sort of, you know, problems with the tax system. You know, we do know that certain forms of income are favoured by the tax system. You know, in particular, you know, earned income faces higher marginal tax rates than unearned income. We know there's a big hole looming in the public finances as we move from petrol vehicles to electric vehicles. So you can see some sort of, you know, moves in that direction with changes to the income tax rates on property and investment income, changes to pension contributions tax, and the new electric vehicle mileage tax. But really, these measures were, you know, they weren't really addressing the root problem of these issues. So, you know, what I would have liked to have seen is, rather than just sort of like small steps actually in the direction of some of these changes, actually look at the kind of more fundamental problems of the tax system and address those on a kind of a more first principles basis, if I can say that. So, for example, with the changes to taxations on pensions and changes in taxations on interest and savings income, she's addressed some of the issues there, say the tax rate issues, but not addressed the fundamental issues underlying those in the tax system, that we just don't have a very good way of taxing unearned income. And in fact, if you look across the budget, despite saying this is a budget for growth, actually, quite a number of the measures do increase the taxes on savings and on investment. So that might actually make it a bit harder, in some extent, to actually generate that growth if you're taxing savings and taxing investment a bit more, even if that is to try to equalise taxes to earned income.
Thank you for your analysis. David Phillips there, Associate Director at the Institute for Fiscal Studies. This is the Times Radio Budget Special with Joe Coburn and Andrew Neil. Coming up in a few minutes' time, we'll get more reaction and we'll be joined by David Smith, Economics Editor of the Sunday Times, and Fraser Nelson, Times columnist. After this.
Times Radio Breakfast with Kate McCann and Stig Abel.
We'll unpack and analyse the budget. We'll speak to the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, herself at 7am, and we'll hear from the Shadow Chancellor, the leader of the Liberal Democrats and Reform UK's head of policy.
We'll also get the views of the IFS, the British Chamber of Commerce, Uncle Tom Cobley and all, and we'll find out what it means for your personal budget. Plus,
there's always room for a few letters of the week, as ever on a Thursday.
Times Radio Breakfast with Kate McCann and Stig Abel.
Tomorrow morning from 6 on Times Radio.
Get yourself down to Asda for amazing prices on your weekly favourites. There's rollbacks on stone-baked cheese pizzas, was £2.58, now just £2. Plus two for £5 on fridge fillers like 400 grams of Lurpak Spreadable, 350 grams of Cathedral City Mature Cheese, and so much more. That's the weekly shop sorted. That's Asda price. Selected stores and lines subject to availability. Individual £2 for £5 prices, £2.58 to £4.52. May exclude Asda Express and small stores. See asda.com/small stores.
At Charles Stanley, we get it. Running your own business isn't just a job, it's your life's work. Every decision, every risk, every late night, it's all part of the journey. We've been supporting entrepreneurs for over 200 years. Whether it's sorting your financial plan or mapping out your exit strategy, our expert team are here to help you grow, protect and pass on your success. Charles Stanley, trusted advice for entrepreneurs. Visit charlesstanley.co.uk/entrepreneurs to learn more. Investment involves risk.
Mr. Speaker, the new autumn budget.
There we go. Let the dust settle. Let rumours turn to fact. Over the past 40 years, we've seen financial curveballs of all shapes and sizes. But one thing stays the same. Our experts will continue to filter through the noise, helping you make the most of your tax allowances. Hargreaves Lansdown, helping Britain invest through it all. Capital at risk. Tax rules applying can change.
Listen at 6:30 every weekday morning for your indispensable briefing on the latest politics, business and sports news of the day.
The Budget 2025 on Times Radio.
You're listening to Times Radio with Andrew Neil and me, Joe Coburn. Let's get some more analysis of the budget with David Smith, economics editor of the Sunday Times, and Fraser Nelson, Times columnist, who has done extensive work on welfare and benefits. David Smith, can I start with you and talk a little bit about growth? That's the central mission that Rachel Reeves restated briefly today in the budget. It has been her mission ever since this Labour government came in. Was this a budget that is going to boost growth?
Well, it wasn't. And the reason for that, I mean, if you look at the growth forecasts for the next few years from the OBR, incidentally, I was just watching the start of the OBR's own briefing, and I was surprised that they weren't more apologetic for the leak, the leak that we had. But
yes.
Anyway, the 1.5% growth, it's not bad in the context of what we've had since the financial crisis, which has been around about that or a little lower, but it's not great, and it's certainly not transformative in any way. It's down on what they expected in March because of this productivity downgrade, and it's difficult to see what the levers of growth are. I mean, there are plenty of nods in the direction of entrepreneurship and more investment in Rachel Reeves's budget speech, but very little that was concrete, very little to suggest that we're going to get that that growth mojo back, I think. So it's very it's quite disappointing. And certainly, you know, if you look at the comparisons with other countries, and particularly if you look at the comparison with America, where even with the tariffs, America is going to comfortably outgrow us for the next few years. So I think it's it was disappointing on growth, I would say.
David, it struck me that the government seemed so keen to kind of keep within its fiscal rules and keep the soft left of the Labour Party happy with more spending and more taxes and all the rest of it. But it seems in this budget it's lost sight of what would it take to change the trajectory of this country? What would insert some dynamism, some vision, some growth, get us out of the doldrums, reforms, supply side changes? That is all. That just seems to have now all gone by the board, and we're in a rather kind of quotidian tax and spend Labour government now.
Yeah, I think that's fair criticism. They invest so much in the idea that if the government spends more on infrastructure, then that lifts all boats in the economy. And it doesn't really do that. You know, infrastructure spending takes a very long time to feed through into stronger economic growth. And while infrastructure spending is taking place, it may actually hamper growth because, you know, you're digging up roads, you're doing this, you know, think of what will happen when they reroute the M25 for Heathrow and so on. So I think it's
the whole of the West London will come to a halt. That's what I'm
looking forward to. That not
exactly. And so I think it's you know, everything is, you know, is reliant on government doing this, government doing that, and not enough on what the private sector does. I mean, as I say, she made plenty of nods in the direction of private investment and private sector without doing anything to stimulate or encourage it. And at the moment, it does look like, you know, delayed tax and spend now, raise the taxes later. Yes. In the run-up to an election. And it's you know, and at the same time, I think the key question about this is that for all the projections that we have about government borrowing and government debt, the fact is that even this year, you know, government borrowing is well above what it's supposed to be and well above what it was last year, and there's no sign that is turning, and there's certainly no sign that the growth is turning round. And I think it's just a very limited view. I mean, Rachel Reeves, of all the chancellors I've come across, she is more aware and more concerned of the reaction of the gilt market than any previous chancellor. She follows it. You know, I think most chancellors would have occasionally looked in the direction of what was happening to 10-year gilt yields, but not. I suspect she gets you know, notifications every hour on what's happening there. And she's very concerned about that, very concerned, as you say, to keep the markets on board, to keep the Labour left on board, which, hence the two-child benefit cap, for which she made, I think, a pretty good case in the speech. But I don't think it was something she was setting out to do when she started on this budget process. But the growth thing is lacking, you know. The growth thing is really missing from all this.
Let's bring in Fraser Nelson, Times columnist, who's been listening to that. Stay with us, David, as well. Fraser, this budget in many ways was sort of constructed to keep the soft left of the Labour Party happy. And it may do that in the short term, but it could also prove quite quickly very unpopular with the country at large for a Chancellor and a Prime Minister and a government which are already very unpopular.
Well, that's right. I mean, to govern is to choose, and Rachel Reeves has certainly made her choice today. She has kept faith with Labour MPs, significantly more welfare, abolishing the two-child benefit cap that they've always wanted, as well as other significant increases, unemployment benefits up by 4%. But what it's difficult to do is to reconcile that with the original promise of stoking growth. Tax is now going to be the highest in history. That's what the OBR says. We're now going to see growth is now worse than what it was expected to be when Rachel Reeves came into power in the first place. We're going to see living standards squeezed a lot. We're going to see households are going to be eating into their savings, according to the OBR. They're going to run them down by about 2/3 simply because there's going to be a decline in household disposable income. And most of the country is going to feel the squeeze quite quickly. So, yes, the welfare has been delivered. But, yes, this comes at a price, which is likely to be paid by those who'd rather hoped that Labour might have been able to kickstart the growth in the way that they'd promised.
But, Fraser, taxes going up to pay for higher welfare. How hard is that going to be to sell for Labour MPs, even if they welcome it on the doorsteps?
Well, this is going to be rather... If the polls show that even Labour supporters are against the abolition of a two-child cap, this has become a kind of obsession with the political class. But for the country as a whole, the people don't think it's fair. There's something like 75,000 houses on welfare with five children or more. So this is going to be, for those who are going to get the benefit, sure, it's going to be significantly more. The OBR reckons perhaps £5,000 a year. But the average taxpayer does not see this as being fair. And they will, and by the way, there's so much more that she hasn't funded in this budget. The defence spending pledge hasn't been funded. Bailing out special education leaves for council hasn't been funded. So we can expect more tax rises down the line.
Right. I mean, on that, Fraser, we'll come to what wasn't mentioned. She did briefly mention defence, but not up to the levels that are being expected by 2035. She was very keen to blame and to emphasise Tory legacy, Tory cuts to public services, Brexit, Trump tariffs. Is that enough of a justification for the downgrades that the OBR have made to some of the metrics? Does that still hold?
Not really, because the OBR knew about Trump's tariffs last time around. They knew about Brexit last time around. But the OBR have increased unemployment by quite a lot. 250,000 more people on unemployment next year, they say. Now, that is since the March forecast. So it would be a sort of very convenient to blame us all on the referendum that happened 8 years ago, but rather difficult at this stage in the cycle.
Let me come back to David Smith, economics editor at the Sunday Times. David, when I look at the rather lackluster performance of the previous Tory government, say between 2019 and 2024, and then I look at the forecasts for the OBR taking us to the end of the decade, with growth downgraded, living standards barely rising at all, not a lot of business in investment, unemployment high, all sorts of economic indicators just not going the right way at all, the highest borrowing rates in the G7, the highest inflation in the G7. I look at all that. Is it too harsh to conclude that with both parties are responsible for us now being in the middle of a lost decade?
Yeah, it does look like that. It's not that long. You may remember, Andrew, that Boris Johnson was suggesting we were going to have the Roaring Twenties, and whatever the opposite of roaring is, crawling or struggling is what we've got. And Fraser's absolutely right that we one of the puzzles about the British economy, apart from that we're not investing enough, we're not productivity is weak, and I think the timing of the productivity downgrade was because the OBR looked back at this for the first time in published something in early July. But the real surprise for those of us who've grown up with the UK economy is we're usually used to consumers, households spending too much. One of the things we've had in recent years is households have not wanted to spend. And the reason, of course, is that they feel squeezed. They've never had a squeeze on real wages like the one over the past 10 or 15 years. And that's why, if the OBR thinks that they're going to save less to spend a bit more, then, we really need that spending. Consumer spending is nearly two-thirds of GDP. If consumers don't spend, we don't grow. And at the moment, consumers are very cautious about spending. So anything that's, it's not just the kind of animal spirits of businesses that need to be livened up. It's the willingness of British households to do what British households tended to do in the past, which is spend like Billy Ho, and they're not doing that at the moment.
Fraser, let me finish by putting two things that have really jumped out at me. They didn't make the headlines, but they jump out at me. One is that living standards are set to be essentially stagnant for the rest of this decade, which is terrible news for everybody listening to this programme and for people who hope that things would get better. And secondly, the OBR thinks we're going to stop saving. And I guess we're going to stop saving because the budget has penalised us for saving. So we're just going to stop doing it. And stop doing it dramatically. It sees the savings rate collapsing. So living standards stagnant, savings rate collapsing. Neither of that can be good.
No, of course. And the savings are collapsing because of living standards are going to be stagnant. And when you look at where the OBR now thinks the average employee earnings going to be at the end of his decade is actually less than it was pre-crash. Mm. That's not one lost decade, that's two lost decades. This is really quite extraordinary. Never in British history have we had almost a quarter of a century without any real improvements in employee earnings. And people, you know, Rishi Sunak's great hope was that these companies sitting on cash piles, the consumers sitting on the savings, would suddenly spend it, unleash it, get growth that way. Now, they are going to be dipping into those savings, but not to really to get growth, simply because they won't need to make ends meet. So this is going to be, you know, a basically an austerity prescription, which is going to struggle to make people feel at the next election that they're significantly better off than they were at the last one.
Fraser Nelson. Austerity by another name,
well,
Joko.
And actually, I was going to, because she said no austerity.
You know, it's not Tory. That was Tory austerity back then. Basically, what Fraser's saying is that we've now got Labour austerity.
Well, you'll remember the age-old comment from a US president is, do you feel better off
Reagan.
The time of the next election? And if you don't, then woe betide.
And that helped Labour win last year as well, because people in 24 didn't feel better off than they had been in 2019. But the risk on these budget projections now is that people are not going to feel better off by 2029.
No. Well, we'll have more of that just after the break. But thank you to David Smith, economics editor of the Sunday Times, and Fraser Nelson, Times columnist. After the break, you're listening, by the way, to the Times Radio Budget Special with me, Joe Coburn and Andrew Neil. We'll get the market's reaction.
This is Times Radio.
Those who are curious feel an urge to travel, to explore the world. At Viking, we create voyages for the thinking person because travel enriches the mind and connects cultures in meaningful ways. With small, modern, all-veranda ocean ships that were designed to bring you closer to the destination, discover the world's iconic cities and quaint villages. Exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at Viking.com.
The Furniture Village Black Friday Sale. Huge savings on sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. But hurry, it ends Monday.
This Christmas, McDonald's and the Elf on the Shelf are bringing festive tasks to your little ones. Like writing a Christmas card for your postie.
Thank you. You're one happy helper.
Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 30th of December from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy while stocks last. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
Strictly Come Dancing, the live tour, returns. Join the judges, Shirley Ballas, Anton Dubek and Craig Revel-Horwood. And your host, Jeanette Monrara, for a dose of thoroughly feel-good entertainment. Strictly Come Dancing, the live tour, coming to an arena near you. Book your tickets now.
Get the day's politics, business and sport every weekday in Breakfast from 6:30 a.m.
The Budget 2025 on Times Radio.
You're listening to the Times Radio special coverage of the Budget of 2025. And there's a lot in it, and there's a lot we still got to talk. We are live on air until 4 o'clock this afternoon when John Pino will take over for Drive Time with more reaction and so on. We talked earlier in the programme about how, in a way, Rachel Reeves was trying to walk a line between keeping the soft left of the Labour Party happy, particularly the Labour backbenchers, because she wants to save her own skin along with Keir Starmer, hence a lot more tax and a lot more spend. But at the same time, she had to keep the gilt markets happy, because that's where governments go to borrow. And if you try to borrow too much, there will be a penalty to pay, as Liz Truss found out the hard way. So how's that balancing act going? We've had a lot on the political side. Let's get a city reaction now. Simon French is the Times columnist and managing director of the city firm Panmure Liberum. So, Simon, let me just ask you straight out, what has been so far, or what will be, because these things don't happen that quickly, the reaction of the markets to what they heard today?
Pretty calm reaction, to be honest, Andrew. I think if you'd offered the Chancellor on what has been a pretty difficult day for her, these reactions on gilt markets, which largely across the curve is lower yields, so lowering borrowing costs for the UK government, then she would have taken them. What is driving that? I think, given the mistakes of last year's budget in terms of the tax increases she proposed being quite inflationary, employer national insurance passed straight through to end consumer prices, I think the key element of the OBR analysis that landed at a little bit early at lunchtime suggested about 40 basis points off next year's inflation rate as a result of the policy measures in the budget. So when you're trying to price gilts at the moment, particularly the short end, shorter dated government debt is priced off expectations for interest rate cuts from the Bank of England. And it started the day expecting one cut, probably at next month's December meeting. It's about nudged out to two cuts, with a further one coming early next year on a slightly more favourable inflation path.
Of course, the problems may emerge once the hedge funds and the institutional investors and the city analysts all start to dig deep into this. And a budget which depends, rather than just, say, a simple rise in income tax rates, which is bankable and delivers a lot of money from day one, a budget that instead depends a lot on a smorgasbord of tax rises, some of which may not deliver the revenues that they say they'll deliver, that's one of the things when it could start to unravel a bit and the government's fiscal position doesn't look as solid as they say it is.
I think you're absolutely right. I think if you look at the employee rights bill, which is coming through Parliament at the moment, but the OBR again didn't score in the impact that that's going to have on economic growth and employment. The analysts will be looking at that. We already have, and said, well, actually, is this a complete picture of the economic pathway for the UK economy? Is this going to lead to more borrowing than perhaps the Debt Management Office is planning and signalling to markets? And as a result of that, you would expect yields to push higher. It is the degree over the next 48, 72 hours, to the degree to which, first of all, we find these hidden parts in the budget documentation, which runs, well, the main documentation runs to 200-odd pages, but you add in all the consultations and supplementary documents, it runs to more than 1,000 pages. Mm. Once you've worked through all of that, even in the age of AI, it takes a while to unearth some of this stuff. Mm. And when you do that, will you start to go, well, actually, it's not going to be as much of a tax-rich budget as we think? Also, this is quite a back-end loaded tax increase. Yes. And bringing the political lens on all of this, which, as in the city, we must do, is a lot of that is going to land at the time when the next general election is at least slated for. How realistic is that in modern day politics? I think most of us would conclude that the opportunity to U-turn will be just too tempting.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about, because I think the back-loaded element of this will probably cause the market some concern when they look at it more carefully. First of all, you're right, taxes are due to go up by less than $1 billion next year, but they're up by, it's either 23 or 26 billion by the end of the decade, which, as you say, is right on election year. And then you look at whether some of these revenue lines will actually deliver. Take the so-called mansion tax. Now, that is slated to only bring in about 400 million anyway, but we learn that you might be able to defer paying it if you say you haven't got the cash. If you haven't got the readies, then you can defer until you die or until you sell the house, which will reduce the take as well. There just seems to me to be the potential for a lot of things to go wrong at a time when finding dynamism, finding a reason why you could be optimistic about the British economy, is quite hard to find.
It is, and I think there's another area which I know you have strong views on, as I do, which is the energy profits levy in the North Sea, 78p in the pound, is raising less than half what the OBR thought it was going to on its introduction. So the behavioural impact on, and you mentioned the high-value property tax, you know, what's going to happen in terms of, you know, capitalising that additional cost into house prices, what that does to the wealth effect. The behavioural impact is not something that the OBR, indeed, let's give all fiscal forecasters there, either their dues or indeed their criticism, which is it's very difficult to analyse the behavioural response. But in areas where you've got high value assets, where those owners have options, judging what the behavioural impact will be and therefore the richness of that tax take is a really difficult task. And with that doubt, it's logical that gilt investors would say, well, it's probably not going to be as rich as they think it's going to be.
Simon, do the bond markets, where governments go to borrow massive sums of money, I think we're going to be borrowing over the next 2 years another £350 billion between new debt and refinancing existing debt, do they care about what the OBR thinks the deficit of the debt will be by 2930? Are they not more concerned by immediate trends rather than forecasts, which by definition, you and I know will be wrong in 29?
Yeah, I think they look at it as a signal rather than the specifics of it. So I think we only need to, if we had Liz Truss or Kwasi Kwarteng on this interview, they they would have learned, I hope. Maybe they haven't, but I hope they'll have learned the lesson that, yes, you may want to sideline the OBR, but the markets will say, well, what else does that indicate? Does it indicate that actually the sort of somebody marking your homework is a valuable signalling device on how much you're trying to sort of sneak stuff through without proper interrogation? Now, the market, the gilt market, does that interrogation, but it does initially, at least initially in terms of its market pricing, put quite a lot of weight on that. And it wasn't just in 2022. Also, if we cast our minds back to the last budget, last October, when the OBR, when Richard Hughes spoke and talked about the inflationary path, the issuance path for gilt, that was market moving. So yes, it does listen, but not to the specifics, but to the signal it's providing, directional signal.
Simon, Joe Coburn here. In terms of signals, Rachel Rees, the Chancellor, was very clear and very careful about signalling to the markets about her stability rule, about the headroom that will be doubled to £22 billion rather than the just shy of £10 billion that had existed before this budget. How important is that to you and the markets?
The Evening Edition with Kate Borsay on Times Radio with the new Volkswagen California camper van. Embark on an evening expedition, rounding up the latest news and previewing tomorrow's headlines. Plus, don't miss Hit the Road, your essential weekly travel guide to the best destinations across the UK and beyond. Every Monday to Thursday night from 7 on Times Radio with the new Volkswagen California camper van. Designed for every adventure. Search New Volkswagen California to find out more.
Download the free Times Radio app and listen to us wherever you are.
Life's like a photo album. Mine bring back so many memories. That's a street party on VE Day. Me, 3 years old. Oh, here's me, 17, teddy boy. Our wedding. Didn't my Shirley look lovely? Holiday in Devon when the boys were small. They tower over me now. Oh, now these are the more recent ones on my phone. Oh, that's me and Kate enjoying a game of cards. She's my care professional from home instead. Kind, funny and very good at gin rummy. Since Shirley passed away, Kate comes to the house most days to help with the things I can't manage so well now. She's great company. I mean, the boys visit me most weekends, but they can't be here all the time. So home instead have really helped. I have the best quality care, but in my own home, from Kate. She's wonderful. Though she will have to let me win at cards now and again.
For award-winning home care you can trust, go to homeinstead.co.uk.
We travel to explore, to learn, to connect. At Viking, we believe travel should be more than just a trip. It should be a doorway to cultural insight and personal enrichment. Our itineraries are designed to help you explore and engage with your destination through its food, culture, and customs. Start planning your river, ocean, or expedition journey today. Viking, exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at viking.com.
The Budget 2025 on Times Radio.
This is Times Radio. You're listening to a budget special with Andrew Neil and me, Joe Coburn. We were talking to Simon. I don't know if he got the question from me before we went away for a few moments or so. Simon, you've had time to think about it, about that stability rule, about the headroom that Rachel Reeves has created, nearly £22 billion rather than the £9.8 or £9.9 billion that she had leading up to this budget. How important is that to you and the markets?
Well, thank you for the additional thinking time. So I think it's part of two. It's part of two aspects that I think help the government escape what is seen in markets as something of a doom loop. The first of all, as you rightly identify, in the first two fiscal events this Chancellor presided over, she left herself just £9.9 billion worth of headroom. More than doubling that to £22 billion worth of headroom is helpful on reducing the amount of speculation, what we would describe as mark-to-market speculation, when bond yields, as Andrew was talking about, go up, has that chipped away at headroom. Now, the more she has, the less that speculation. The other element of this that helps is there was an announcement that she's only going to have one forecast a year from the OBR that is binding in terms of the fiscal rules are going to be assessed. Now, again, if you hear, and I have done for the last 2.5 months, hear from businesses pausing activity based on the endless speculation, if you halve the frequency of those speculative events, then you do give the opportunity for business and consumers to have a period of respectful silence with which to conduct their transactions, to do their investment. So I think those two are the positives in terms of trying to escape what had been dubbed the doom loop.
Simon, just one more question before we let you go. Sterling seems to be holding up reasonably well in the aftermath of the budget. It's at 132 against the dollar and 114 against the euro. But I want to come back to something that you mentioned earlier when we spoke about interest rates. What do you see, just to spell it out for us, the course of interest rates? I know the bank has a meeting next month, and there'll obviously be more meetings through 2026. What is now the Citi expectation of the trajectory of interest rates? And if they are going to be cut, what does that do to sterling?
Yes, so the December meeting, a reminder that in the November meeting, it was a knife-edge vote, 5-4, with the governor, Andrew Bailey, having the casting vote. And in his qualitative comments, the first time we've had from MPC members qualitative comments, he said, look, he just wants more information. Well, he got quite a lot more information today. So it'd be quite difficult for him, unless the economic data is fundamentally altered, and I don't think it will in the next 4 weeks, for him to say, actually, I'm putting in a new threshold in terms of expectations to cut interest rates. So I think the market is right in thinking December is a done deal in terms of a 25 basis point cut. I think it's more of an open question in terms of next year. The Citi and myself, I think we think about another 25 basis points is reasonable in the face of a economy. But circling round to what that does for sterling, you're absolutely right. If sterling weakens on attracting less hot money into sterling assets, then that can start to sort of light up inflation because our imports become more expensive. I think this is where all the eyes go on the United States. And in the last 24 hours, we've had weak economic data out of the United States, suggesting the Federal Reserve may be cutting, maybe not later this year, but certainly next year. That helps sterling on that crucial cross rate with the dollar. So to some extent, the Bank of England would be rather hoping that the economic data gets worse in the US because it gives us a bit more latitude without crashing the pound versus the dollar.
So I mean, just one quick thing, because I think a lot of our viewers, listeners will be puzzled. You've talked about a scenario where the benchmark rate by the bank could come down to about 3.5% sometime next year. And yet the OBR seems to be factoring in rising mortgage costs. Why?
Well, it's still got a series of mortgagees who are, they're the ones you pass on the street smiling, Andrew, who took out 5- and 10-year deals back in the pandemic. They haven't gone through the pain of refinancing. And therefore, to some extent, you've got this, it's quite a long tail, actually, of people on long duration mortgage products who still have to refinance at offered rates that, although have come down from their peak, are still higher than they were paid.
So they've got more to pay no matter what the Bank of England's benchmark rate is. Thank you for that. I understand that now. Simon French there at Panmure. Thank you very much, Joko.
Yes, well, let's get some more political reaction following the budget. We can talk to Danny Kruger from Reform UK. Welcome to Times Radio in this budget special. First of all, your overall impression of the budget?
Thank you. Well, you know, it's what we expected. And of course, it was very heavily trailed.
Yes.
And the chaos that preceded the budget reflects the fact that the Treasury and the government are in meltdown. So having told, being told back at the election that they weren't going to be raising taxes significantly, we've seen today the second huge tax raise on all productive activity in the UK, including good, responsible people saving money, investing in property, a million more people being dragged into higher rate taxation through the freezing of the threshold.
Yes.
So this will not be helping the economy, And if there's any marginal reduction in the borrowing requirements in order to stop the bond markets destroying us, that's welcome. But I'm very sorry to say that it's been offset by all these tax rises and then spending increases as well.
Well, spending increases, but some of the spending increases that you support, reform back scrapping the two-child benefit cap, that's something you welcome today.
Well, no, what we want to do is to scrap it just for people who are in work. I mean, the fact is there are, I'm afraid to say, there are many, many people who are entirely dependent on benefits for whom I don't think it is appropriate to offer them unconditional, unlimited, additional universal credit child benefit. So I don't think we should be doing that. We reform want to make a much smaller change to ensure that people who are working, who are paying their own way...
What, the deserving deserving and the undeserving, is that what you're saying?
Well, listen, people who... Well, the working and the non-working, I think that's a legitimate distinction. And universal credit child element does go to some working families. We think it should be... It's right to support them. You know, fundamentally, we do need to be supporting families. We need, do need to be encouraging people to have children, but they should be paying their own way as much
as possible. Presumably, then, you back all of the cost-of-living measures that were in this budget, which will, Rachel Reeves says, help families, reducing energy bills, for example. Yes, the scrapping of the two-child benefit cap, the figures were pretty compelling in terms of moving hundreds of thousands of children out of poverty. You will support those measures in the budget?
No, we won't, because the way to support children and families out of poverty is to get the economy growing again. Large-scale fiscal transfers, simply to get people from one side of an arbitrary line about the median income to another, is not a, is not the sort of systemic economic change that we need to support families. So what we want to see is growth. We want to see less.
Well, everyone wants to see growth.
Well,
what
would you do?
What would you actually do, Danny Kruger?
Okay,
which
specific policies? Yeah. Okay. Well, so we've announced this package of cuts that we think the government could make, particularly around welfare, to reduce the numbers of people who are receiving very expensive PIP and universal credit health
payments. How much would that raise?
Well, there's at least £10 billion just by changing the rules on mental health PIP eligibility to stop people who have mild, non-serious mental health conditions from being consigned to the sofa for the rest of their lives, told that they're useless and that they have no value to the economy. We don't think that's right, fair for them or for the taxpayer. There are other changes we'd like to make about reducing foreign aid. We would reduce the amount of money being spent on illegal migration by having a swift detention and deportation.
Well, the government would say they're doing that. But can I just point you to one of the areas that Reform have talked about? And that's £50 billion in wasteful spending. Which specific areas will you be targeting in government departments to find £50 billion in wasteful spending?
Well, I've already announced as part of my work preparing for government significant rationalisation that we think we can achieve in the
austerity.
Central government.
Austerity, basically.
Well, you can call it austerity if you like. It's what I'm talking about is cutting out middle management and expensive leases on real estate in Whitehall. There's been an enormous rise in the last 10 years in the size of the civil service. Now over 500,000 people employed by the civil service. We think we can get that back down significantly lower and saving tens of billions of pounds just in reducing cost to that level. And then there's a huge amount more that we could do in terms of saving the taxpayer money, which we're already doing, by the way, in local government. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, except that... what you're saying and what your party's pledge has been to cut council tax for reform-run councils, 8 out
thank
of 13
you.
Of those which your party runs, have now hinted at plans to raise council tax.
Well,
and
thank you for allowing me to correct you. We never made a pledge to cut council tax in local government. I'm sorry to say a couple of candidates out of the thousands that stood inadvertently
put
it on their leaflet. Well, they were wrong. You never heard a Reform Party leader saying we were going to cut council tax.
Well, there's only one
leader. No one at the centre, none of us have ever said we would cut council tax because we can't at this stage.
No, you're going to have to increase.
And because debt is so much. Well, we're raising it significantly less, by the way, than Labour and Conservative councils are doing. So, but unfortunately, because of the dysfunction of our social care system and the debt that most local councils have, council taxes is continuing to rise across the country, including in Reform councils. But we are taking out costs. We've saved over £100 million just in the councils that we run already in the 6 months that we've been there. And we're introducing more efficiency measures in the coming months. So we are confident that we can do that. But the real The real opportunity is at central government level, because there's so much waste there. I mean, the austerity you mentioned,
Danny,
fell largely on local government in the last decade. It's the centre that the cuts need to be made.
Well, I know, but Danny Kruger, I can't tell you how many times I've had politicians of all stripes talking to me on radio saying we can find billions of pounds in wasteful spending, and they never can come up with it. They can never come up with the billions of pounds that they say are behind the sofa in central government. Departments.
I appreciate
so
that.
So why on earth would voters trust reform to be any different? I'm not saying you'll be any worse, but why would you be any different when we've just discussed now? Actually, council tax will probably have to go up. When it comes to trying to have tax cuts, Nigel Farage has recently said that's not going to be possible either, because you cannot find that amount of money from waste.
So waste is not the only part of the challenge. We could do a huge amount by improving services themselves, improving productivity. But I recognise your point. And let me just answer your question.
Yes.
I totally recognise the challenge, which is that over the years, Conservative and Labour promised to make savings that didn't materialise. So we have to be different. And the answer to your question, why they should believe us, is over the next 2 years or so, we are going to be setting out properly costed, very clear, full plans. I've already started doing that in terms of the real estate challenge in Whitehall itself. But there's so much more to be said in coming months, and we're working on that. So all I can say is we will prove it in local government. We will set out very clearly why and how we will do it at central government. And because we are a new party, we have with a leader who, by the way, you know, a lot of people don't like him, but over 30 years he has been consistent. He has remained the same. He has said the same things. He is clearly genuine in what he says about the need for reform. So I think the public are desperate for an alternative to Conservatives and Labour.
Right.
Many people are coming to us because they see us as that change. But many more, I recognise your point, need to believe that we will be different, and that we are going to do that by being very, very clear and very explicit about the changes that we're going to make. And then they will be in our manifesto, and then we will have to do
fine.
It.
We've got lots to look forward to, I can hear that. But what policies would you actually reverse that you heard today in the budget?
Well, listen, I don't want to get too specific about that, because we are going to have to come up with our own economic plans, and we're not going to be hemmed in by what Rachel Reeves has said today. But clearly we are opposed to the tax rises that we've seen. We think it's wrong to be hitting savers. Hitting people.
Are you in a disco somewhere, Danny Kruger?
Yes. Well, you've got our friends from the anti-Brexit campaign who won't give up. With their megaphones. I'm on College Green, and they love to get involved.
Sorry. Well, I suppose fair enough. So I do have one question. If listeners can bear with the music in the background, was it a mistake, referring to the Prime Minister's statement on G20 in Ukraine yesterday? Was it a mistake for Nigel Farage not to be in the Commons?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Richard Tice was there, and he spoke very well about our support for Ukraine. There is this absurd attack going around that because of this treacherous former politician in Wales, that somehow we are not sympathetic or not supportive of Ukraine. Totally untrue, demonstrably untrue. Richard Tice made that point very well. Nigel can't be at every debate, nor can I. So we share out the common sign. There's only five of us, so we can't all be at everything.
No, well, Danny Kruger, thank you very much for talking to us, and for listeners, for bearing with the music in the background, sounding very jolly. On College Green, clearly still to come, we'll hear from the Labour backbenches. This is Times Radio Budget Special with Joe Coburn and Andrew Neil. But first, the headlines with Tom Noonan.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Joe, thank you. Good afternoon. The Chancellor has delivered a budget which will raise taxes as a share of GDP to their highest level on record. Rachel Reeves has confirmed income tax thresholds will be frozen for another 3 years until 2031.
To break the cycle of austerity, we need a fair and a sustainable tax system. One that generates revenues to fund the public services that we all use and supports investment to grow our economy. That does mean that today I am asking everyone to make a contribution.
It means one in four workers will be paying the 40 or 45% tax rate by the 2030-31 tax year, with millions paying more tax than they did 2 years ago. The Chancellor will also tax salary sacrifice pension contributions above £2,000 a month, reduce the tax-free cash ISA allowance to £12,000 by forcing people to invest, close property tax exemptions and add a council tax surcharge on the most expensive homes. The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, says the public can't trust the Chancellor anymore.
She has chosen to put up tax after tax after tax. Taxes on workers, taxes on savers, taxes on pensioners, taxes on investors, taxes on homes, holidays, cars, I think even milkshakes. Taxes on anyone doing the right thing. She and this government have lost what little credibility they had left, and no one will ever trust her again.
The Reform UK leader Nigel Farage has branded the budget an assault on aspiration and saving. Separately, the head of the OBR has apologised after the watchdog published the details of the budget before Rachel Reeves had announced it to MPs. Richard Hughes hasn't ruled out resigning over the mistake, which caused markets to move before the Chancellor's statement. Don't forget, you can set the Times News Briefing as your new service on Alexa.
This is Times Radio.
Strictly Come Dancing, the live tour, returns. Join the judges, Shirley Ballas, Anton Dubek and Craig Revel-Horwood, and your host, Jeanette Monrara, for a dose of thoroughly feel-good entertainment. Strictly Come Dancing, the live tour, coming to an arena near you. Book your tickets now.
Here's the truth about AI. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/UK/AI for people.
Nice. Direct Line just sorted me a courtesy van while they're fixing mine after my accident. That's how it's done. Imagine if that's how everything got done. Like clients paying you on time. All done.
Brilliant. Your invoice is all paid up, left you 5-star reviews. Oh, and a bit extra in there for staying late that time. And I baked this cake for you too.
Nice.
Direct Line. That's how it's done.
Comprehensive cover required. Courtesy van limited for up to 21 days if your van is written off, stolen, or you use your own repairer. Excludes windscreen claims.
The Budget 2025 on Times Radio.
You're listening to the Times Radio special coverage of the Budget of 2025. In the next half hour, we're going to hear from Labour Party reaction, from business, and from the Resolution Foundation, which is one of the more influential think tanks with this government. So let's get on with it. Let's go now to Ian Byrne. He's a backbench Labour MP for Liverpool, and we can speak to him now. Ian Byrne, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Andy.
Is this going to... Will this do it, or will this go down well with Labour backbenchers?
It certainly goes down well in my constituency. You said Liverpool, obviously. It was the MP of Liverpool, Andrew. It's Liverpool West Derby. And, you know, it's some of the measures that were announced today are exactly what, you know, my struggling constituents need. You know, just, you know, I'm probably going to touch on the two child cap, aren't we? But, you know, 3,000 kids will be lifted out of poverty. So I think there's lots of measures in there which I feel as though we're on the right road where we need to be going as a party to tackle the inequality which we all see in our communities. Wherever you live, you can see how the country at the moment's divided and how people are struggling. So I think it's along the right lines.
So there's no cause for concern on your part or your colleagues on the back benches, most of them, that if you take last year's tax increases and this year's tax increases, this government will have raised taxes by more than any government since Labour was in power in the 1970s.
Look, I think for me, Andrew, again, I'm going to say it a lot. You know, it's the gross inequality, and my worry about obviously freezing the tax threshold today is that the disposable income level drops from 1% increase to 0.25%. And honestly, Liverpool has been absolutely battered for the last 14 years. You know, with austerity and cost of living crisis, COVID, and people in my community have had enough. They're on their knees, and sure, they need They need a vision. They need something which can...
But was there a vision today? I mean...
I think it was about...
What's the vision? What is Labour's vision now for the future of the country, other than a bit more tax and a bit more spend?
Well, I thought that budget was getting along the lines of a true Labour budget, which was tackling the inequality, which you mentioned. And, you know, as I said, you know, I don't think... Wherever you stand on the political spectrum, and look, I admire you and Joe hugely, and it's an honour to be interviewed by both Israelis, my first time. But we mightn't agree politically, but I think we can all agree what we're seeing across the country. We can see the divides, we can see the inequality. So, and I do think that today was the first budget in a long time which has gone to try and address that, or certainly started the journey to addressing it. So, and as I said, I can only speak as I find it, Andrew.
Of course.
Liverpool's been absolutely mullered the last 14 years, no. And it needs respite, and my people need respite, and that today's a bit of a respite.
So how does it help inequality that very low earners, because of the freeze on income tax thresholds, are now going to find themselves paying tax that their equivalents never did in years gone by? In other words, we're now going to tax low earners, and middle earners... And are going to find themselves facing a marginal rate, when you include NI, of 42%, which was never designed from them. How does that help inequality?
Well, I think what helps inequality is some of the other measures that have been mentioned today. You know, you're right, the taxes are undoubtedly an issue, and it's going to get raised a lot. However, we've got to realise that we have got to pay taxes. We want services. Lots of people, to me, are complaining about services that that are within their communities, and the dereliction, really, of how services, what used to be, aren't there now. So I think there's a real issue around what we need to be doing as a country. Obviously, we need the economic issues, what we face. But for me, Andrew, we've got to challenge that inequality. And what she's done today, I think, is going away towards that. And as I said, the two-child cap was the thing that we've been campaigning for a hell of a long time. I was suspended for 6 months for voting to scrap it. So it's something which I'm really keen to talk about, because that was a true Labour measure today.
And it doesn't concern you that growth has been downgraded. I mean, I'd remind you that your party was elected to government in 2024 on a mandate to produce the fastest growing economy of the G7. And yet here we are 18 months in, and growth between now and the rest of the decade has been downgraded. And as part of that, Ian Byrne, you talked about inequality, and I understand why you do that, but we know from the OBR forecast that living standards of ordinary people are going to remain stagnant for the rest of the decade.
Absolutely. We've had the lowest uplift in the living standards since the Napoleonic times, since Osborne's austerity measures.
And it's going to continue under Labour.
It is, and that's the mess what we've inherited. However, again, as I say to it, you know, this is the beginning, hopefully, of reversing that absolutely demolishment of working class living standards, which has taken place over the last 14 years. So I feel as though, I'm going to see a bit of chink of light here. I'm going to say as though there's measures there. We're looking at taxing excess wealth. There's things that we should be looking at.
But you're not taxing excess wealth, are you?
Well, we're looking at the houses, the elements of housing. So we're looking at
That raises 400 million.
Well,
it's not even rounding error on this.
Andrew, it's a direction of travel which we hadn't had before. We hadn't heard before, which I haven't seen in the last 14 years, which I'm welcoming today.
So for you, let me see if I've got this right, Ian Byrne. For you, you see this as a return more to the traditional Labour tax and spend, and that because of that, that's pleasing you. Would that be fair?
You know what's, what's pleased me, Andrew? 14 years of absolute underinvestments. We talk about productivity going down, and we need productivity for growth. If you carry on decimating communities like we've been decimating them, and the inequality of what we're seeing across our communities, how can we grow as a country? I think today's a realisation that the status quo cannot prevail. We've got to do something differently.
But she didn't announce any more business.
Well, I think the Labour Party has missed 12 months, really, to start addressing that.
But there's no more public investment announced today. And business investments is weak.
Business investment. Sorry, I didn't catch that down, Andrew.
So what I said was that she announced no more extra public investment today. There wasn't an addition. And on the private sector, business investment is weak. And recently, they've kind of stopped investing. So where's the investment coming from?
Well, but I say again, we've had 14 years of underinvestment.
I'm talking about the 4 or 5 years coming up, Ian.
And what we're hoping now is that there's a change of direction from the Chancellor, and we can start looking at a more optimistic future. And that's what, hopefully, which I think today was a turning point. I think it was a traditional Labour budget.
Right.
There's a long, long way to go. It was nowhere near the finished article.
We'll need to leave it there, Ian Byrne, but I thank you for joining us. I'm sure the Chancellor will take comfort from what you had to say. She'll be pleased that that's at least one backbencher who's on side. Ian Byrne, Liverpool West Derby.
Let's talk about one of the specific policies and measures that were announced today by Rachel Rees. That's the minimum amount for workers over the age of 21. It's set to rise by just over 4% to £12.71 an hour. It's currently £12.21 an hour. And younger workers aged 18 to 20 will get an 8.5% pay rise from April, taking the minimum wage to £10.85 an hour. However, businesses have warned that further increases to the minimum wage could result in hiring freezes. Indeed, the Resolution Foundation warns that the unnecessarily big rise in the rate for 18 to 20-year-olds risks exacerbating their job struggles. And it says the extent of the rise should prompt a rethink of the wage-setting process. And that is from the Low Pay Commission, and the Chancellor has taken on all their recommendations. Well, let's talk to the Resolution Foundation and the Chief Executive, Ruth Curtis. Ruth, what do you make of the impact that those rises might have in terms of recruitment?
So in terms of the rise in the main rate, that is actually quite small relative to rises in the minimum wage that we've seen in the past. It leaves the minimum wage rising in line with earnings. It's the second smallest rise since 2016. And I certainly think it's not unreasonable to expect the minimum wage to rise at the same rate as earnings in the economy. Where we're concerned is on those rises to youth rates that you mentioned, particularly the rate for 18 to 20-year-olds, which is rising at 8.5% and is rising much faster because the government has set an ambition to remove any difference between the rate paid to 18- and 19-year-olds and older workers.
Right. I mean, is that going to have a detrimental effect on hiring? We've already heard, not just anecdotally, but statistically, that people are postponing those decisions because of wage costs.
So we are particularly worried about introducing this increase in the youth rate at the current moment in time when we are seeing rises in unemployment. We're seeing rises that are particularly seem to be concentrated in a lack of hiring rather than in firing, and also seem to be concentrated at the younger end of the labour market as a result. We've heard ministers talk a lot about NEET rates, young people not in education, employment, or training. Those rates have risen by about 185,000 over the last year, as best we can tell. And that doesn't seem like the right time for us to introduce a measure like that. And I think thinking about the system of the Low Pay Commission a bit more, they've got into the habit, I think, of being set a target in a few years' time and drawing roughly a straight line to that target. Yeah. And we think it would be good to have a system that adjusts more in a more sophisticated way for the current economic circumstances.
Right, so it's time for a reform there. You called originally for a 2p raise in income tax offset by a 2p cut in national insurance back in September. Of course, we thought that's what Rachel Reeves was going to announce several weeks ago. Why do you think they didn't do it?
I don't know why they didn't do it, but clearly that would have been a breach of the letter of the manifesto, which said that they wouldn't touch the main rates of income tax. It wouldn't have affected employees, which is why we thought it was still worth considering. In terms of what the Chancellor has done today, we've got that big measure in freezing personal tax thresholds, arguably, instead of the 2p switch. What we have seen the Chancellor do is increase rates on savings, on dividends and on rental property income by 2p, which has some of the same effects as the original proposal.
But do you think it would have been better economically to have gone for one rise or one big tax in the headline rate to bring in the revenue that she needed?
Well, in some ways, I think this point about one big tax versus lots of little taxes has been overdone. Actually, we do have quite a big tax rise in single measure in this budget. And I think when that comes in 2028, we shouldn't underplay the significance of that rise. It is, you know, freezing thresholds is slightly less progressive than a rate rise, but it's obviously the measure that politicians also from the previous government have frequently turned to try and raise more money from personal taxes without raising the main rate.
Ruth Kerr.
The real difference between something like that and some of the alternatives that were floated is the impact on employees versus other forms of income. So versus the self-employed and versus pensioners who arguably have got off a bit light in this budget.
Ruth Curtis, Chief Executive of the Resolution Foundation. Thank you very much for talking to us.
It's interesting, Joe, we don't talk so much about unemployment these days.
Well,
you know, when I first started doing budget, the first budget I covered live on air was the 1979 budget, the first Margaret Thatcher's first Geoffrey Howe. Mm. And of course, unemployment, that was the metric. That was what everybody worried about. And yet even today, we know that unemployment is now at 5%, which by modern standards is quite high. Mm. And according to the OBR, it's just going to stay there.
Yes. I mean, we got used to what you call, I think, in sort of statistical economic terms, sort of almost full employment for a number of years. Yes. And in a way, it sort of crept up on
5% us. 5% is 1.8 million people.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot of people. And particularly when you're talking about young people and their prospects.
Yeah, we've got a million of these NEETs. Well, not education or
employment
training.
No, and that's very worrying, I think, from a societal view.
It's interesting how the political, even with the Labour government, the political talk is so little about what can be done. Because there's nothing in this budget, according to the OBR forecast, that's going to change that 5%.
No, it's going to stay like that for the forecast period.
Looks like it.
Well, still to come, we're going to hear what business thinks of this budget and we'll talk to them about some of these issues. You're listening to Times Radio Budget Special with Andrew Neil and me, Joe Coburn.
Times Radio Breakfast with Nationwide. Start your day with Times Radio's essential morning briefing. With intelligent conversation and incisive analysis from some of the most respected names in politics, culture and entertainment. Hear well-informed opinion and quality journalism on all the big stories making the headlines. Times Radio Breakfast, tomorrow morning from 6, with Nationwide, a good way to bank.
Download the free Times Radio app from the App Store or Google Play today.
What good is sitting alone?
Winning a record-breaking 7 Olivier Awards, Cabaret at the Kit Kat Club is still the best musical in London, says the Daily Telegraph.
Life is a cabaret, chum.
The most electrifying night out starts the minute you step inside. Outside it is winter, but in here it is so hot. So right this way, your stage side table is waiting. Book your tickets for a perfectly marvellous gift this Christmas at KitKat.club.
Looking to grow your investments and generate a long-term income? The Scottish American Investment Company, also known as Saints, could help. Saints has been investing for over 150 years and focuses on growing capital as well as income by investing in a diverse range of companies from around the world. Saints is managed by Bailey Gifford, manager for some of the UK's best-known investment trusts. Find out key information and more at baileygifford.com. As with any investment, capital is at risk and income is not guaranteed.
Add water to your will and know that from that single drop, life will grow. Communities will flourish. A better world will be left. By leaving a gift in your will to WaterAid, you'll help bring essential clean water to people who need it, to change their own lives for generations to come. Add WaterAid to your will. Search WaterAid Legacy to find out how.
The Budget 2025 on Times Radio.
You're listening to the Times Radio Budget Special with Joe Coburn and Andrew Neil. And we're going to finish up, taking us up to 4 o'clock, to get the view from business with Stuart Rose, a former M&S chief executive and Conservative peer. But before we do, Joe, for people who are just joining us, maybe getting home or getting in their cars just to listen, let's just go through some of the things that the Chancellor announced. There's going to be big tax rises coming, but not quite yet. They're backloaded towards the end of the decade. The two-child cap benefit has gone. There'll be about 26, 27 billion more in taxes. The personal tax hold, the thresholds for the 20% and the 40%, they're going to be frozen for not 2 years, as we thought, but for 3 years, which means there'll be a decade in which these thresholds were frozen and low earners dragged into the basic rate, middle earners dragged into the upper rate.
And that is really the biggest revenue raiser.
By far.
Because despite the fact that Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor, said that she wouldn't be going back for the same scale of tax rises, and she hasn't in that sense to last year, it's a sizeable amount. Headline rates aren't changing, but certainly the thresholds are. But there are other things. There's what we colloquially call a mansion tax, but there's going to be a surcharge on those very high value properties above
$2 million
and $5 million. Plus, you're going to have a change to the pension rules around salary sacrifice. And we'd already heard, actually, from the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, about a sugar tax being extended in terms of the products that it's going to take in. So those are milk products. Those are just some of the things that Rachel Reeves announced today. And cost of living measures, you mentioned one, scrapping the two-child benefit cap. One of the others is scrapping a scheme that the Tories brought in to try and bring down energy bills by £150 a year.
But by putting the cost of all that onto the general exchequer.
Absolutely.
And if you thought you were one of the good guys by driving an electric vehicle, like me, then you're not really, because you're not going to face a mileage charge. Maybe
you take with one hand or give it with one hand and take with the
Gordon
other.
Remember, Gordon Brown told us all to go for diesel cars, that they were the future. We got subsidised.
Yeah, I fell for that.
Turned out that it was the wrong way to go. Anyway, let's speak now to Stuart Rose, who joins us, as I say, former M&S chief executive, Conservative peer. Stuart Rose, the budget of last October was seen in the end as being pretty anti-business, especially with the rise in national insurance. How do you see this one?
Well, Andrew, first of all, I've been in a meeting all day, so I've only just caught up with what's going on. So I've just literally heard the end of your interview with Ruth Curtis. But, I mean, this is a sort of Chancellor walking the tightrope, isn't it? This is the get-out-of-jail card for today. It's a bit of political escapology. But, you know, what it hasn't done is it hasn't, you know, it hasn't upset the backbenchers, presumably, because they've had a bit of welfare benefits coming through. It hasn't kept the markets quiet. So, presumably, the bond markets, I understand the interest rates have come down a little bit. The stock market is ticked up a tiny fraction, but it's done nothing to give confidence back to business. And you alluded to last year, which was October last year, when I was still chairman of quite a large retail business, we got hit just in one business for £140 million of extra costs, which we had to then pass some of on to the customer. What I've seen today is nothing to give comfort or to incentivize people in business to say, I am going to invest more or I'm going to feel very good about 2026. Now, this is all based also on the fact that the OBR has pushed up the growth forecasts, despite the fact they've taken the productivity forecasts down.
No, it's pushed down the growth forecast, Stuart. It's pushed up the growth forecast for this year to 1.5%. But it's downgraded the growth for the 4 years after that.
Correct. And as you pointed out, this is a back-end loaded budget. So it's all, OK, we're going to do a few things today. But by the way, I'm going to get all this revenue back in the last couple of years of the government, relying on these tax increases coming through from fixing the bans and whatever else. I'm a conservative, so you'll say I'm biased. But I was still running or starting a business today, I wouldn't rush home tonight and say, darling, this has been wonderful for our business. Let's invest another 10, 20, 30, 40 million pounds.
And what would darling say in reply to you?
Well, she'd probably say, I couldn't say it on this.
Get off your backside and start investing. I'm sure that's what she would say. So we know that because of this enormous long build-up to this budget and all the kites that were flown, that business kind of ceased to do very much. They said, well, hey, let's just step back and wait and see what we're actually giving you. From what you're saying is we can't really expect business now to roll up its sleeves and start investing?
Well, go back to your first point. You're absolutely right. The business has sat on its hands. And I've often pointed out before to colleagues in business that time is your biggest enemy. Now, by the time we digested this and decided what to do, it'll be the spring of next year. Now, what's happened is that having just digested last year, now having digested this year, we've seen a lot of things being frozen, for instance. Freezing something is fine for today. Freeze the rail fares. Fine, let's do that. Let's have a moratorium on some other costs. But at some point in time, these costs will have to be passed through. You had, I think, a conversation with Ruth about employment and employment prospects. If you stuck up the increase for 18 to 20-year-olds by 8.5%, employers will be saying, can I afford to employ some more people? At some point, if they say yes, that will be passed on to more inflation. So although it's an anniversary, I'm not as confident about inflation coming down by 0.4% as I think has been flagged for next year.
Joe and I were talking about unemployment and how it doesn't actually get enough coverage. By recent standards at 5%, it's quite high.
Yes.
And the OBR thinks it will stay at 5% for the foreseeable future. But I do wonder if that might be quite optimistic, that if the animal spirits of the economy are not returning, and if AI is taking away a lot of new entry-level jobs, 5% may turn out to be quite low.
Quite low and quite expensive, but your very good phrase, if I might say so, is animal instincts. People thrive on a good feel-good factor. People thrive on being able to see the end of the runway. People thrive on being able to say that if I put a pound in today, I might be able to get £1.20 out tomorrow. At the moment, I don't hear from my colleagues in business that feel-good factor, and I don't think it will return in the short term. I don't want to be a negative. I don't want to be a Jonah. I care about my country. I haven't left the country. I'm still here working, paying my taxes.
Right, I understand that. But would you not say that whereas the previous budget was seen as being a bit anti-business, particularly with the rise in NICs, although it doesn't do very much from your point of view, it's not particularly anti-business, is it?
But it's not anti-business per se, but the one thing that we all want, and this is a different issue from business, is we want to see our country growing and we want to see and be able to do the things with the infrastructure, the universities, the roads, the judicial system, defence and whatever else. There's absolutely no recognition in this budget, as far as I can see, and I haven't read the Red Book, about cutting welfare costs. There's no commitment here to actually reducing the level of taxation that government is imposing on the individual. There's no commitment here to reduce the burden that people are having to pay for. And if that's not going to happen, it doesn't matter what you do for business, because business will never generate enough revenue to pay the cost of running the country on this basis.
All right. Well, I shall take that as a broad thumbs down from Stuart Rose, speaking on behalf of some businesses, and probably relatively representative there of what business thinks. But we'll get more reaction as the day goes on from business leaders and so on. Stuart Rose, thanks for joining us. We're almost at an end as we come up 2 minutes to 4 o'clock. Joko?
We are. I'm just thinking about the headlines tomorrow. Yeah. And Rachel Reeves, of course, will do a whole range of interviews about the budget. I mean, self-preservation feels like it's not a very sort of sexy headline,
not,
if you like.
It's not a great reason for a budget.
No,
either.
It's not. But
which is meant
to
help the economy, not Rachel Reeves.
Well, and hearing Stuart Rose talk about the feel-good factor, it may just not be there. It is all we have time for, I'm afraid. That's it from the Times Radio Budget Special, from Andrew Neil and from myself.
They'll never get us out of this studio.
No, I'm clinging on.
We're staying
I am
here.
Back,
it's a sit-in.
I'm back tomorrow.
We're never going to leave.
You stay there, then.
I will.
I'm going. I will be back tomorrow for the Times at 1. But from all of us, bye-bye.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Andrew, for leading the way through the analysis and pulling apart what we've just heard there from the Chancellor. It's 4 o'clock. I'm John Pienaar, and this is Times Radio Drive, coming to you live from College Green, across the road from the House of Commons. Budget 2025, that is what we are doing here. First, the headlines. Rachel Reeves has delivered her budget in the House of Commons, including £26 billion in tax rises. And the Office of Budget Responsibility has apologised after releasing their fiscal outlook early by mistake before the Chancellor's speech. And coming up, analysis, discussion. We're going to be doing the post-mortem on the Chancellor's budget. I'm going to be talking to, among others, the leader of the Institute for Fiscal Studies, and the best reaction from across the political spectrum. So stay with us. I promise you miss nothing. And now the news with Tom
Dean. This is Times Radio.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. The Chancellor has frozen income tax thresholds for another 3 years in her budget, meaning one in four workers will be paying the additional or higher rate by 2030. It means millions of people will be paying more in income tax than they currently do. Rachel Reeves acknowledged that it means many people's taxes will rise.
I know that maintaining these thresholds is a decision that will affect working people. I said that last year, and I won't pretend otherwise now. Madam Deputy Speaker, I am asking everyone to make a contribution.
The Chancellor's tax increases overall mean the UK's tax revenue as a proportion of national income will reach a record high by 2030. Rachel Reeves spoke to a febrile House of Commons because details of her budget had been published in error by the watchdog, the Office for Budget Responsibility, half an hour before Ms Reeves had even got to her feet. Times Radio's Deputy Head of News, Alex Dibble, has more on how it unfolded.
As well as taxes rising to £26 billion, there was pensions, making salary sacrifice contributions above £2,000 subject to national insurance, and adding 2 percentage points to tax on dividends, property and savings. But all of it was out there before PMQs had begun, thanks to an unprecedented leak by the OBR. It meant MPs were reading the budget on their phones, showing each other the announcements, while Rachel Reeves was sat on the front bench trying to communicate with her Treasury colleagues. She finally got up to ironic cheers. Then came all the policy change, a mileage-based charge on electric and plug-in hybrid cars from 2028, the so-called mansion tax, and reducing the amount you can put into a cash ISA. It was a cocktail of crucial economics for a government on the rocks with a twist.
The budget will mean an estimated £9 billion of extra welfare spending by the end of the decade, partly because Rachel Reeves announced she will scrap the two-child benefit cap in April. That's what the Leader of the Opposition, Kemi Badenoch, focused on.
That smorgasbord of misery we just heard from her can be summed up in one sentence. Labour are hiking taxes to pay for welfare. Yeah. This is a budget for Benefit Street, Madam Deputy Speaker, paid for by working people.
The Times' chief political commentator, Patrick Maguire, says while there was a big cheer for ending the two-child benefit cap, and that shows the budget will go down well with Labour, it won't with the wider public.
I've just had a text and I'm speaking to you from a senior Labour figure who said, it's a disaster, we're on the wrong side of every statistic and public opinion. And I think that ultimately sums it up. You know, in Number 10, they used to speak of grafting realists and striving moderates as their two key constituencies, the sort of Mondeo men and women of the age. They are not going to be feeling any better off as a result of these decisions.
We are now going to hear from Rachel Reeves as she gives a speech. Let's hear from the Chancellor.
To cut the debt and borrowing, and crucially, to cut NHS waiting lists. And that's why I'm really pleased to be here this afternoon with people that make that happen, the nurses, the doctors, all the staff here at the hospital. And I want to say a big thank you to everything that you do. And I know that Kia and Wes said it to you earlier, but, you know, you really are an inspiration. And to be able to come and see where that money is going is really, really important to me as we put the money into those new neighbourhood health centres and the new technology to use in the NHS to support patients, but also give you the tools that you need to do their job. I think we're going to take a few questions now from the media. Gemma, a few months ago, I promised that Look North would get the first question post-budget, and I'm going to deliver on my word, Gemma. So I'll talk directly to the people of West Yorkshire. Especially Leeds.
Yes. Well, it's good to see you keep a promise, Chancellor. I was talking to people on the high street in Pudsey yesterday in your constituency, and it won't surprise you, they are really struggling with the cost of living. They see the price of things go up and up and up, and wages haven't kept pace with it. Businesses are still reeling after the measures in last year's budget. And today, extending that freeze on income tax thresholds will really hit working people. So when you're back up north, what will you say to your constituents? Can you look them in the eye and say things are going to get better because of the budget?
So for people in Leeds West and Pudsey and people all around the country, in Yorkshire and beyond, there will be a reduction of £150 in your energy bills from April next year. That is tangible difference, money in the pockets of working people. And in addition to that, we're freezing NHS prescription charges. We're freezing train fares. So if you're getting on the train in Bramley or in New Pudsey, it's going to be a bit cheaper than it would have been next year. And we're doing all of those things because I know that the cost of living is still a real challenge for people day to day, week to week, month to month. And that's why in this budget I am taking direct action to tackle the cost of living. But also, if you are being seen at LGI or St James's Hospital or going to your GP surgery in Armley or Bramley, then also people will know that we're putting money into our NHS and those new neighbourhood health centres to take the pressure off the hospitals and have people treated closer to home. Next question, Shahab.
Chancellor, there was a lot of pressure on you and your government in the lead up to this budget. Plenty of backbenchers have expressed frustration and anger. In this budget, you have scrapped the two-child benefit cap, which has meant that some of them are quite happy. Do you think you've done enough to appease all of them?
My focus in the budget is on the country and the people who elected us into government last July. I know that the number one concern for people is the cost of living, which is why we've taken £150 off of people's bills by removing some of those levies and the eco scheme, which has been an utter failure, and using that money to cut people's bills. But I'm just chatting here to some of the nurses and other staff at the hospital. The two-child limit and getting rid of that has a benefit beyond those families, because so many patients who end up in hospital, so many kids who end up in hospital, are there because of respiratory conditions, because they may be in poor quality temporary accommodation. The cost to local councils of that, but also the cost to the NHS. And in our schools as well, when I talk to teachers, especially in primary schools, about kids coming into school not ready to learn because of the conditions at home, whether that's a cold house or not enough food to eat. So getting rid of the two-child limit is about addressing child poverty and also reducing some of those costs on other parts of the system, including in our NHS and in our schools. Beth.
Thank you. Chancellor, today you've announced that you're extending the freeze on tax thresholds. It will raise £8.3 billion. In the budget in 2024, you said extending the threshold